You're listening to Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. Cranberries are a staple on the American Thanksgiving table, but they used to be much more than a once-a-year novelty. They were a staple of Native American and then early colonial diets. The ways that cranberries are grown and have been eaten have changed a lot over the centuries, and my next guests have tracked all of that. Cynthia Graber and Nicola Twilley are the co-hosts of the Gastropod podcast. Try saying that 10 times fast. Welcome to both of you.
Great to be with you.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
So you start your podcast episode about cranberries actually with some misconceptions about how they're grown. You know, if you're mostly familiar with cranberry farming from, say, Ocean Spray ads, it looks like they're grown underwater in a big lake, when in fact, bogs aren't really that boggy most of the time. Cranberry bogs are actually pretty dry most of the time, and really only flooded during harvest, right?
So bogs do get boggy, which I always had thought was, you know, a little damp. It is certainly one of the characteristics of them. They get wet at different times of the year, and there's kind of a layer of organic matter under the sand that keeps them from draining really quickly. But they're sandy, and it's that sand, it's kind of the perfect, like, sandy and acidic, and that's what really allows the cranberries to thrive. And it's only we humans that decided it would be a good idea to harvest them when it's wet.
I should say that it is possible to get wet at a cranberry bog because they have ditches around them, and I managed to fall in one of those. But technically, you should be able to visit a cranberry bog most of the time without getting wet. There are other reasons they flood them. They can flood them if there's a frost coming on, because a cranberry bush can survive with its roots underwater for a month, even longer if it's not in the growing season, keeps down pests. So they will flood the bogs for other reasons than just harvest. But yeah, it should be possible to visit a cranberry bog most of the time without getting your feet wet.
You know, I actually live about a block from a cranberry bog, and there's nothing about it that seems terribly natural. They scrape it completely clean of plants every couple of years and relayer, you know, the organic matter in the sand and then put new plants in and all that kind of stuff. And it made me wonder, when did this style of cultivation, of farming of cranberries actually come about?
Was invented by my people. I'm originally British, and even though cranberries are a native North American fruit, it was a British Joseph Banks, sort of a botanist, horticulturalist, scientist, researcher, who came up with the sort of system for cultivating cranberries in these artificial bogs. So this is like the late 1700s, early 1800s. Didn't catch on for a while after that, but I just have to take the credit there.
Right. But then you, as you were saying, Heather, you live on the Cape, and actually that's where commercial cranberry farming started. Until then, as you mentioned, you know, they were a major crop for Native Americans. They were wild harvested, and when the early colonists came over, they also started quickly gathering wild fruit. But there were so many people, grabbing at all those wild fruit and harvesting them as quickly as possible that there were even laws put in place to prevent them from, people couldn't go out with rakes, or they could only go out at certain times. And then there was a guy in Dennis, Massachusetts, named Henry Hall, and he's the one who came up with the idea from seeing the fact that locals also had been digging for bog iron in the bogs around you.
Yeah, this is something that was completely new to me that you, Cynthia, and Nikki covered in the podcast. This idea of bog iron and actually iron mining and how that led to the rise of modern bogs. It's fascinating.
Yeah, that's why the cranberry farming, that's how Henry Hall got his idea. People were digging for bog iron, and then when that ran out, there were these kind of just holes that got filled with sand that got colonized with cranberries because the roots love the acidic sandy soil. And he said, wait a minute, you know, we can do this commercially.
A lot of the older bogs, ones that are 100 years old but still in operation, are former bog iron pits and that have been converted into cranberry bogs. So you can still see them today.
Wow. You know, so if you look at, say, a wild blueberry and a cultivated blueberry, they're pretty different. I mean, they're different in size. Certainly, there's high bush, low bush blueberry. Are there variants like that with cranberries? Is the cranberry that we're really familiar with at this point very different from the wild cranberry of several hundred years ago?
Well, one of the things I love is that actually these days, because the most popular use of cranberries is the craisin, cranberries are being bred to be larger and sort of squishier for craisinability, I guess is the
that's a great
technical
word.
Term there. So yeah, they have changed over time.
And there was actually a European cranberry, or I should say there is a European cranberry as well. Is that, you know, actually a related species, or was that just a similarity in appearance that they ended up with the same name?
No, they are actually related. In fact, there are lots of berries that are related. And
There's some amazing ones.
Whortleberry, bilberry,
farkleberry.
Yeah, farkleberry was my favorite. But there is this tiny little, even more bitter. Our cranberries, they may taste sweet when you get them dried, those craisins that Nikki was talking about. But if you eat a dry one and an unsweetened one, a fresh cranberry, not a dried one, it's super tannic and sour, and apparently the European ones are even smaller and more sour. But in the Netherlands, they're called something similar to cranberry. Nikki, do you know how it's pronounced? It was like cronberry, I think, is the name. And apparently the Puritans, yeah, I'll mess that one up. Apparently the Puritans had spent some time in the Netherlands before they came to what's now America, and so they named the berry that they found here, which is a relative, after what the name they heard in the Netherlands, which is cronberry.
Well, and as you guys kind of tell in your podcast, your episode of Gastropod, the Puritans, these European colonists, came to what is now the United States and found these cranberries that seemed similar, and they were really into them. How were they used, and how did they show up on early colonial tables?
Well, people used to joke, actually, that if you went to a New England home in the early 18th century or the 19th century, every corner on the table would have its own giant jar of cranberry sauce that people added to everything. So they were clearly popular. But there's a tradition in the UK of serving these kind of tart fruit sauces with roasted meats. They go really well together. Red currant sauce with lamb and gooseberry sauce with roast duck and goose and things like that. So they would have been familiar with that sort of concept, I think. But I think there was also sort of a Puritan sense that, like, here's this berry that sort of is not super sweet, and it's actually kind of it almost feels virtuous in that it's not super lovable straight away, and it's bounteous and everywhere, and even the poorest can gather it. So it felt sort of right. It was a very Puritan berry, is what the historian we talked to said. You know, it just really fit everything about how a Puritan fruit should be,
including growing in really tough soil. I mean, it was this, I loved that image of it. So,
but of course, Native Americans had been here for thousands of years before that, also eating cranberries, and they were used in quite a different way. It wasn't necessarily about sauces, right?
Yeah, they would dry them and pound them with meat into pemmican, which is kind of an early power bar, you know, an early energy bar. And then they also would mix them with sweet corn. They didn't, you know, sugar them in the same way that we tend to make them sweeter, but they were kind of plentiful throughout Native American cuisine.
I want to talk about the two main ways that we actually eat or drink cranberries at this point, because other than showing up at Thanksgiving, it's mostly juice. And then you've also mentioned craisins. And apparently both of those are kind of the brain children of one inventor. How did those actually come about?
Yeah, this one guy, Marcus Uran, in a long time ago, actually, at the start of the 20th century, came up with cranberry sauce and craisins. Now, canned cranberry sauce. Now, canned cranberry sauce caught on more quickly. Craisins, they were included in American soldier rations during World War II, and they were popular, but they didn't catch on with the public until Ocean Spray sort of introduced them in 1993 as the craisin. I guess they were just called dried cranberries before, and who wants those when you can have a craisin? So,
and was it just the name, or was it more added sugar that perhaps made them more popular?
Yeah, you might be onto something there.
I think so. Plus, they are really sweet. But I think Ocean Spray just had a really big ad campaign behind them. And one of the things that Nikki and I thought was really funny about cranberries are these ad campaigns that have been made. They're eaten so traditionally for Thanksgiving and Christmas. But at one point, there was a whole ad campaign to try to get people to eat them for Father's Day. I know. And so it did not work.
Trying to figure out what the connection there is.
Zero. But they wrote, my favorite was at the Ocean Spray had an advertising campaign, and it was about a chicken that was in love with the cranberry. And the point was that you should have cranberry sauce with your chicken. But at the 1948 Massachusetts Cranberry Festival, they had romantic poetry that the chicken wrote to the cranberry. And one of them was, "What butter is to biscuits, what honey is to a bee, what syrup is to pancakes, cranberry is to me." Didn't work, though.
How could that not work? All right, so let's talk about the Thanksgiving tradition. I mean, it really is cranberry sauce, but of course, depending on where you live and family traditions, everybody's got a very different favorite cranberry sauce recipe. Do you guys have a favorite way to do cranberries for Thanksgiving? Or I guess, Nikki, in your case, for Christmas.
Yeah, Nikki, you want to say anything about Christmas?
That's the thing. And this was a funny moment for me. And I, maybe some of your listeners will know whether this is true. But in the UK, where I grew up, we don't celebrate Thanksgiving, obviously. But we do celebrate we have turkey at Christmas instead. You know, got to have the turkey, squeeze the turkey in somewhere. And we have it with cranberry sauce. And one of the things that I wondered is, well, hey, if you harvest, you know, here in the US, it makes sense to have, you know, you're harvesting the cranberries in the fall, makes sense to have them with the Thanksgiving feast. In the UK, well, they've got to cross the Atlantic. So maybe that's why we just have them a little bit later.
A little bit later.
A few weeks later. Exactly. I don't know. Maybe that's, I have no idea when that became part of the standard British Christmas meal. And clearly we'll have to make a gastropod episode looking at this one day. But for now, it's a mystery.
Clearly. And I have to admit, I don't have a favorite. After we did this episode, I brought some dried cranberry. I always call them dried because they feel dry, but they're not. They're fresh cranberries. I brought some fresh cranberries home and I did make a sauce, but I don't really love cranberry sauce. I like the dried cranberries, the kind of craisin types, and I like them in baked goods, but I'm not a huge fan of cranberry sauce. Sorry.
You know what I make? I make a cranberry curd tart.
Oh, that sounds good.
For when I get, you know, I'll take it to a Thanksgiving potluck or whatever, and I think curd is cranberry's secret power move. So that's my top tip.
Cranberry curd. That's a new one for me. That's Nikki Twilley and Cynthia Graber. They're the co-hosts of the Gastropod podcast. They did a whole episode about the science and history of cranberries, and you can find that on their website, gastropod.com, or wherever you get podcasts. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Up next, how to know if it's time for Thanksgiving by looking at the stars. Living Lab Radio continues after a short break.